You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio. You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Dr. Melody Fox right here on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Answers for the Family. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and I'm flying solo again as my co-host, psychologist Dr. Melody Fox, is making a house call today, tending to one of her clients. Solo or as a team, each week we will bring you guests that can inspire, educate, and entertain while bringing answers and options to raising children today and in our constantly changing future. We will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and many great ways to keep your family mentally, physically, and spiritually sound. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. And we'll continue to bring you some of these incredibly talented and caring people each week as we bring you Answers for the Family. Our topic today is parent empowerment. And this is parents taking charge of their children's education and treatment. Our guest today, Lon Woodbury, is an independent educational consultant with over 28 years of helping parents who are looking for resources for their children with problems. Lon publishes an industry newsletter called Places for Struggling Teens, which is about residential schools and programs and the professionals working with them. And he hosts a radio show right here on LA Talk Radio called Parent Choices for Struggling Teens, which follows this show, so stay tuned. Lon, welcome back to Answers for the Family.
Well, thank you, Alan, and good morning.
Good morning. It's good to have you. I've enjoyed having your show following mine and have enjoyed listening to your show, and I hope that a lot of our other listeners as well are trying to take in both shows to see what they can learn about how we can all help our families today.
Well, it's been sort of interesting because I'll get an idea for a guest and boom, you have them on. And so I have to look someplace else, but that's fine. We overlap some, and that's great. It makes a great two-hour segment.
Absolutely. Now, we talked a little bit about, our topic is going to be, parent empowerment. Now, you speak a lot about it. You do it on your show. You do it in your newsletters. Share with our listeners really what you mean by that.
Well, what I mean by parent empowerment is where parents take responsibility and make the decisions. Traditionally, particularly in kids that had troubles, emotional behavior problems, traditionally, the parents would go to the doctor or the probation officer of the law or the state to say, my kid's got a problem. Can you find some help for me? And it's almost like they were going hat in hand and asking some agency or some authority to find something for the kid. And gradually, over the last 30 years, parents begin realizing they don't have to go through this authority or this professional. They can go directly to schools themselves and make that decision and be a part in it. And this is the private pay, or I refer to it as parent choice schools and programs. And so by parent empowerment, the parents are empowered or empowering themselves in order to make a key part of those decisions instead of being a passive participant or asking for somebody to help.
So, in what ways is this difference as it relates to taking charge? This attitude, how is it happening, for all of us?
Well, a couple things are going on. One of the things is that it makes the parents more involved, intrinsically more involved. There's been a tendency in the professionals, and again, this was the good or the bad old days. Some professional would say to the parents, you messed up your kid, give him to us, don't bother us, and we'll fix him. And they begin to realize that wasn't working, and it's much better if the parents are involved not only in the treatment, but in the program and in the selection. So that's one aspect. And the other, the dynamics are professionals working with the kids have to be aware and bring the parents into the into the loop because the parents have made the arrangements, either paying for it or found some third-party payment to fund their kid.
Now, you mentioned a little bit there where you said that some of the parents were sort of, you know, saying, you know, take my child and fix it and not really getting involved. I mean, to me, I mean, I see that as sort of tied into sort of our, you know, our society or the portion of it that has really gotten into entitlement. Do you see that as well as to where that's where that was coming from?
Yes, I see that as part of it. But the interesting phenomenon is that the parent empowerment movement, and it's pretty broad, goes contrary to that helpless victim attitude, or however you'd want to call it, and it's sort of going contrary to the trend, and partially because back in the old days when the saying was the doctor knows best, maybe the doctor doesn't. Maybe the parents know the kids better than the doctor, and that's been increasing, rapidly growing. This is what I've been able to document in the 30 years I've been involved, is there are more and more programs working with more and more kids, with more and more parents realizing that they can take action themselves.
Now, I mean, how else is parent empowerment happening, and specifically in education, and more specifically in public education?
It's happening a lot of different ways. One of the most interesting things is in California, the trigger laws, is what they called, actually, when you look at the legislation, is called the Parent Empowerment Act. And this has been picked up and was voted down in Florida, but there's a big hustle there. About 20 other states have picked it up. So it's occurring in these trigger laws, because that's saying the parents are allowing the parents to get in and get more involved. It's also the basis of the charter schools, in that the parents have more say in the matter and on the running of the school, because there's fewer regulations or things like that. And it's also evident in the vouchers. Now, those are both pretty controversial, but the whole idea behind the vouchers is to give the money to the parents, and the parents make the decisions. So the parents, again, are intimately involved in this, at least the decision of it. So it's becoming pretty broad in that. And then another aspect is the online opportunities. And again, a lot of children, more and more children are being homeschooled, and a lot of those are using online education, and some of the schools are using that. But again, the parents have some say in the matter, and the kids have more say in the matter when they're using online education. So all the way around, I see in education from several different fronts and several different approaches, parents are being better empowered to make the decisions regarding treatment and education for their children.
All right. Now, you mentioned a little bit about vouchers. Now, with the voucher system, are there states that have voted that in? Because it's, from my knowledge, or at least here in California, I thought they voted against it. So what states are doing that?
Well, it's mostly been controversial, and there's a certain amount of vouchers. They were using vouchers in D.C. until Congress started to eliminate them. I'm not sure. I think Wisconsin was working on that. That's something that's been more controversial than impact, but I refer to it as something that's got some fairly broad support. It keeps coming up and is controversial, and the whole thing behind it is to empower the parents. So I don't think there's very many areas. Maybe some local jurisdictions do that.
Now, and you also mentioned in regards to charter schools. Now, charter schools is something that that we have been having quite a bit of growth here in California. Is that something that you see that's happening nationwide?
Yeah, it's happening nationwide, and even in Idaho. Idaho's always had a cap. It was something like you can only have 6 charter schools, or a limited number of charter schools in the state, and the legislature just removed the cap for unlimited number of charter schools in the state of Idaho. And I think things like this are happening nationwide as charter schools becoming more and more common throughout the country. I don't have a list of the states, but I keep reading articles from all kinds of different states about the charter schools, what this charter school is doing and that, and charter school organizations. So that's been something that seems to be finding its own in the public sector.
Yeah, it certainly seems to, at least here in California. In fact, I've sat in on some board meetings and such and really looked into some of the charter schools here in California, and it really is impressive. There are some really, really good schools out there, some great people running them, and for you parents that are listening out there, I mean, if you're uncomfortable or you're not really liking what's going on in the public school that your child is going to, find out what charter schools are near you. You know, it's really a great way to go, and you'll find that there are some great ones out there. Now, along those lines, you also mentioned a little bit about what you said, parent choice schools or programs. Explain to our audience a little bit what a parent choice school is.
Well, parent choice is basically the parents are making the decision for enrollment and perhaps a certain amount of the decision of what the child does, having more influence than usual. I use it in the context that where I'm working is in private schools and programs for kids, for struggling teens, ones who have behavioral, emotional, or learning problems. And I use that. Another thing it says about the same thing is parent pay or private pay, because oftentimes the parents are paying it directly out of their own assets. But it's a parent choice as opposed to some other decision. Like public schools traditionally, and they're changing this, but public schools traditionally have been, it's a jurisdiction. If you live in a certain community, you got to go to this school. And those are falling by the wayside. Charter schools are doing some of that. But the whole thing is, in a parent choice, parent decides program or school, therapeutic boarding school, wilderness therapy, whatever. I want my child to go to this, and if the school says yes, it's appropriate, we'll take them. That's the decision, and the rent payments are for paying the tuition are made, and that's it. Parents have chosen the place, and it becomes very competitive with schools working to attract parents, so, of course, so they can have the student body and the income in order to survive. So parent choice is just simply the parents are making the decision as opposed to some third-party agency or professional.
Now, for the parents out there that are saying to themselves, gee, I'd like to be able to have more choice, but I have no idea what choice I would make or where my child would be a good fit, I want to share with everybody that now we introduced Lon as an independent educational consultant. So for those listeners that aren't aware what that is, Lon, explain what an independent educational consultant does.
An independent educational consultant works for the parents to help the parents find an appropriate match for their child. And the ones that I work with are focusing on struggling teens, but there's a lot of them that help. You can hire them. They will go through their experience and come up with the college that's the right match for their child, or private boarding school, mainstream boarding school, or military school. And then in my area, it's working for therapeutic boarding schools or wilderness therapy programs or things like that. And they are an educational consultant is paid by the parent. They're working for the parent. And in a sense, they're sort of the quarterback. They have the experience and knowledge of this area and what to watch for and what not to watch for, and advise the parent, this would be a good match because it doesn't so, but that school would probably not be a good match because it doesn't so. And so it's somebody the parents can go to and are on their side. They're not paid. A legitimate, ethical, independent educational consultant is not paid finder's fees or anything from the school. They earn their living being hired by parents. And, of course, that makes them, if they have to make good decisions, give good advice, or they won't have any clients.
That's right. And now, you mentioned that there are different types of educational consultants. I mean, as you were saying that, and explain a little bit more to the audience about the fact that there are ones that maybe specialize in college placement, and then there are going to be ones that are specialized more in special needs.
Yeah, there's a special needs consultant. The biggest growth area has been in college consulting and independent education consultants working for college. Most consultants tend to specialize. I've specialized all my life. Some consultants, I don't know how they do it, but they do a good job of it. They are broad-based. They'll do mainstream boarding schools. They'll do some college consulting, some special needs. But there's all these various niches or specialties. Now, one thing I might mention here is not all educational consultants are the same. There's a number of people that call themselves educational consultants or even call themselves independent educational consultants, and they don't have very good background. They're paid finder's fees oftentimes, or they have various manipulations, and there seems to be more of an agency to raise money. So when you're talking, I've had some people be very upset with me because some independent educational consultant was paid by the schools, and they're criticizing from me for that. There are some people that do that, that do their practice. That is considered by my professional organization, the IECA, very unethical. But there's some people that do that, and parents have to watch out and make sure that the educational consultant they're working with is trained, and probably the best way to figure that is credentials, not only academic credentials, but membership in a professional organization like the Independent Educational Consultants Association, the one I'm a member of.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, then that's also one that I'm very familiar with as well. And I think in almost any profession, I mean, you know, you're going to have some that are, you know, that are maybe not doing it the way in which everybody's supposed to do it. And understand that that's why there are associations out there. That's why there is training and such, because in many cases, these associations will raise the bar. So, now, I hear another line ringing.
Oh, sorry about that.
It's okay.
It's over now.
Okay. Now, you know, you've been in this, actually, you and I have both, you know, we've been in this profession for a long time. Now, you mentioned a little bit about, you know, the special needs programs and such, and that's the area you specialize in. I mean, how have private parent choice residential schools and programs changed over the last 30 years?
Well, they've changed in a couple different ways. One, just the sheer number of them. As one example, in 1993, I started a directory of the schools and programs I was aware of around the country that worked with kids with behavioral emotional problems, the special needs programs. And there was 29 of them that I found. And then I've evolved that quite a bit, but I've made it more sophisticated. I do an annual survey of educational consultants, the leading educational consultants, and things like that. But the last year, there was about 180. So there's a tremendous growth from almost 30 to 180 schools and programs that fit in that category. Every year, there's several more that develop. Another thing that's happening is that back in the old days when I first started, you could pretty much, a person could put out their shingle and people would check you out and see if you seemed to do good, doing a good job. And it was very much the individuals making the decision. It was free enterprise in a very real sense. Since then, more sophistication, state regulation particularly has developed. As they're become more clinical, more therapists, credentialed therapists working on the staff. And so it's changed in that there's more sophisticated clinical component, and there's just a lot more of them. I did an estimate a couple, 3 years ago, based upon my records. I figured out the records, the amount of income that their student body should bring in, and I came up with it. It's about $2 billion, my estimate, rough estimate, but about $2 billion in tuition being paid to these schools nationally. And I presume it's since grown because, again, there's a lot of new programs. But it's a fairly significant and still growing segment of our education.
Well, and while you're doing some of these surveys and tests, are you able to estimate about how many young people have benefited from this industry, say, over the last 20 years? Is there anybody that has done any estimate like that?
We've done estimate, and just a wild estimate. It seems to me like what we've come up with is something like at any one time of the schools and programs that are in my directory, which is about a third of the ones we're aware of, about 10,000 students.
So at any given time, there's about 10,000 students.
Right. Now, some of those would be short-term wilderness programs, and we don't have good information. We just come up with an educated guess. But I figured about 10,000 students were touched by these 180 programs in a year. So it's been growing, but you could take 10,000 times 20, that's, you know, 200,000 kids. And that's just in these. That's about one-third of the estimates of what I'm aware of. And there's only a we're only aware of a fraction of them because there's a lot of programs that would really qualify, but are under the radar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's a lot of religious schools out there. There's a lot of RTCs out there that would qualify that we haven't made contact with or got on top of.
Well, and I want to share a little bit about something that I did, and this was in 1999. And I had avoided contacting past clients my entire career, and a situation came up in which I felt that we needed to get some statistics. And so I contacted, at that time, I think it was about 600 or so past clients. So and it was just, you know, it was a random thing. We weren't trying to pick out certain types or anything. And out of those, 300 of them replied to it because, again, we didn't want to force them. And the incredible part about this is that out of the 300, 297 of them responded that it was an incredibly positive experience. And this was after the kids had now turned 18. So they were able to speak on their own. This wasn't just what the parents thought, but it was what the young people themselves that we had transported to programs, what they thought of their time in the program. And we had quotes that were pretty incredible. And one of the quotes was, it was from a girl who said, you know, when I was first taken to a program, I was 12 years old and I had been doing drugs, having sex with adult males, and had not been going to school. Since going to the program, this was a girl who I think was 16 at the time. She said she has since graduated high school at 16, has been accepted to, I believe it was Boston College, and has set up some charitable organization that is helping other young people who have been forced to live on the streets or to get involved in either the drug trade or the slave trade. And that was just a quote from one girl, but we had so many incredibly positive things. And I think that's one of the things that we're kind of missing in this industry is that there isn't enough people out there that are really talking about the incredible benefit that is coming to so many of these kids.
Oh, that's exactly right. That's been one of the problems all along, because I think a lot of the kids, that's a time in their life they just soon forget about. They've moved on. And they want to move on and look at the future and not look at the past. And so I'm impressed by those statistics. And I would, if they're a little dated now, but still, I think it'd be worthwhile to put something together. I'd love to publish it.
Oh, you're certainly welcome to. And because I think the other problem that we have, and I think it's more of a societal thing, and that is that, the squeaky wheel is what gets into the news. You know, so
yes.
So you can have that situation of, you know, using those statistics, you know, out of 300 people that replied, 297 of which had a really positive experience and in many cases felt it saved their life. I think our media would focus on the other three.
That's right.
That said that they didn't. And that's all that the people would hear. And that, I think, is real unfortunate, which, again, I think is why you and I mean, are forming shows like this to be able to get the word out, not only to let people know where they can find help for their family, but the fact that there are great opportunities and great programs out there where people can get help.
Yeah, I think more of that. I did a survey, and I'm still sort of collecting it, but haven't gotten very many lately or processed it. But I was getting a number of reports back from the students themselves and from their parents, and it was fairly extensive, and you can still find it on my website, and I get somebody filling it out and sending it in periodically. And I found even some of the programs that were very controversial and that I myself was very dubious of would get an overwhelming percentage of positive reports from the kids themselves saying, oh, I didn't like it, but it saved my life, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's true. I think that kind of goes right to the point of us believing that even when we are not doing exactly what we're supposed to be doing, I think we recognize that we need help. We recognize that we may need more structure, and at that particular moment we may not fully appreciate it. But I think almost all of us afterwards can look back and appreciate the structure. I mean, it could have come from a parent. It could have come from somebody in a school or in a program, but that structure, I think, helps form us as growing adults.
Yeah, I think that applies to anybody. It's well known that kids really crave structure, even though they'll fight it. That's the typical kid, and it's especially true in the special needs kids, because they'll fight it even more so. But deep down, I've figured a number of the kids that you've probably transported, everybody was surprised that they went willingly, and it turns out that they knew that they were in trouble, and they were appreciative of somebody finally doing something.
Well, and you're absolutely right, and which actually it brings me to another point of When we go back, and when we go back to a program, one of the things that we do, if we're taking somebody else, if we see somebody who we brought there before, we will approach them, and we will say the same thing that we had said to them when we dropped them off at the program, and it may be, you know, may I give you a hug? May I shake your hand? It's not a command. It is a question, mm-hmm. and almost without fail, when we go back to a program or we're bringing somebody else out there, kids will run up that are people that we brought 4 or 5 months before. They will run up and they will use the same word. May I give you a hug? May I shake your hand? Something that small that we left them with, they remembered and have come up and asked us for that. And if you asked a lot of people, you know, what they thought might happen, I think people would think, or if you ask the parents, people would think that, you know, they would want to come up to us and yell at us, you know, or something like that. But it really isn't the case. They really are appreciative. And oftentimes, as you said, it's because they really knew that they needed that structure. And I think also they are glad that they were treated with respect.
Mm-hmm. And they can think more clearly. They
exactly.
weren't thinking clearly when you took them.
Yes, yes, and you're right. And now that they are thinking clearly, they're a little more appreciative. So mm-hmm. on that note, we're going to take a break. We will be right back. We are talking with Lon Woodbury, and stay with us, and we will be right back. Founded over 25 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shields specializes in resolving adolescent issues that negatively impact the family. From preteen to young adult, we are experienced and qualified to help. We offer solutions which include referrals to a network of top professionals internationally that we work very closely with in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, and psychiatry. Our in-home crisis intervention care program helps to stabilize families and bring effective resolution. We are supported by our licensed investigation company that enables us to offer legal and expert services for locating runaway teens and more. Our therapeutic transportation services help to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely provided transportation to specialized schools and programs with unmatched experience and success. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services is the best solution when your family is facing personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585 and let us help you. And we're back. We are talking about parent empowerment, and we are speaking with educational consultant Lon Woodbury. Well, Lon, we've had some questions that have come in from listeners, so I'd like to read those to you.
Sure.
We have one that says, 2 years ago, my sister was searching for a special needs school for her 15-year-old who was failing in the public school system, extremely depressed and starting to act out. As well as experimenting with marijuana. As a high school teacher myself, I suggested an educational consultant might help. After speaking with 3 consultants, she gave up, as the options they provided her were entirely too far away or too expensive. Finally, we both dug in online and found a homeschool program that made all the difference in the world. He is now back in public school, working hard, getting C pluses. I guess I wonder if educational advisors ever deal in any other options than sending kids away. Are there other alternatives like homeschool? Is that ever suggested to families?
Well, absolutely. A good consultant covers the ball field and tries to provide the advice as to what would best fit the needs of the child. Now, in this case, just a little bit of background. It sounds like the kid wasn't all that far into the negative behavior. You say depressed, but I'm assuming that's a layman's term for depression, so you're feeling blue or down, not necessarily a clinical depression. And so homeschooling might be very, very good, and an educational consultant, that might not be the first thing that they advise, but they do try to get the whatever they need. Sometimes I've worked with them, and I work exclusively by the phone, and so I don't know the local areas, but sometimes a therapeutic day school might fit. One of the things, too far away doesn't necessarily is not a high priority so far as criteria, because the important thing is to find the best needs for the child. And if homeschooling or homeschooling works, or online or whatever, that's great. Sometimes that's tried and before residential, and it's a disaster. It depends on where the kids are coming from. And so the key thing is for a consultant to get the sense on that and suggest some other possibilities. Have they thought about, you know, homeschooling? Have they thought about sending the kid to the aunt out in Montana or something like that? And sometimes those might be an option. I guess the answer to your question is yes, they do. And my question would be, you talk to three consultants. Well, if you just picked them off the internet, you might have worked with those that are on a basis of a finder's fee, that they'll only revert to places that have high tuition and pay the finder's fees.
Yeah, and you mentioned they mentioned a little bit about being too far away. You're in Idaho. Explain a little bit to anybody that's listening, you know, why somebody doesn't necessarily, or if they do, I mean, you're not in everybody's backyard. Explain how that works.
Well, the reason for that is oftentimes kids that have special needs, when they're getting into a situation to where they have to change their lifestyles, even if they haven't run away before, they might be tempted to run away. And if you have a child in a school or a program 50 miles away, it'd be great, very tempting to get out, stick their thumb out, and hitchhike back home. But if you have them several hundred miles away or across the country, then that's almost impossible for that option. So, So one of the options is that if the kid looks like it might run, you might want to get them further away from home. The other option, and this sometimes depends on the parents, and parents that come in all sizes and shapes, sometimes it's very close to home. The parents might try to spend too much time at the school and as a result interfere with the program for the kid. So that's one of the actually, I have a client I'm working with right now that's one of the programs I'm looking at is very close to him. It might be an advantage because there would be reduced expenses. The kid's not a runner. He likes his creature comforts too much. And the parents could use some family counseling, which would be easier. But as a rule of thumb, particularly if the kid's pretty much out of control, distance is part of the healing.
Well, first of all, I want to say I would have offered you a bottle of water, but for those listening, Lon's not in studio with us. So Lon has called in. But you know what? I would love it next time, Lon, when you're in, if you get down to Southern California, let's set up a show or a joint show where you're here in studio. I think that would be a lot of fun. We've got another question that has come in, another listener question. This one reads, I am new to educational consulting, having just entered the profession 2 years ago. What I thought would be an exciting career helping kids is not working very well, as school systems have cut budgets and the economy has been so hard on families that are trying to place kids. I find it more difficult than what I was led to believe. What do you see in upcoming trends, and should I hang in there and continue my dream of being of service to young people?
Well, I think it definitely should try to do that. There's a lot of factors. One is the population area. It's especially difficult to do it when you're in a remote area, like I live in North Idaho, and so that makes it more difficult. If you're in a population area, there's more opportunities. Part of it is it's the economy. Hopefully the economy will get turned around and things will start booming again, like some elements in our national leadership are telling us is happening. And it sounds like you maybe started 2 years ago, just about the wrong time to get into it, because that's when some schools were closing and parents are cutting back, and everything slowed down there for a period of time. So it depends on a lot of factors, but I'd say hang in there. Maybe don't quit your day job quite yet if you have a day job, and keep looking at ways that you can do it. Maybe find something that makes you unique, like what I did to get the attention is I started publishing a newsletter. This was back in 89. I started with the newsletter and getting myself established. And that was sort of unique. Kept me something to do in between phone calls, too.
Okay. We have another. I'll wait.
Yeah,
for the...
ignore the phone, please.
Okay.
I don't know how to turn it off.
Okay. Anyway, we have another question that has come in, and this one is coming from a parent that says, I have a 14-year-old girl who isn't coming home at night on a regular basis, has started cutting school, and is extremely defiant. I am not sure what to do next, nor do I think I can afford these types of programs that I've heard of.
Well, that's tough. There's a number of state programs you might be able to tap into. It gets mixed results with them because some of the state agencies act like they're crazy when they and the decisions they make. There might be a short term. There's some scholarship opportunities. They're not near as many as there's the demand. Sometimes there's scholarships. Sometimes there's state programs that will fund. What I recommend to parents is do the research, find out what's available, and get an idea of the type of thing that's necessary. Maybe it might be just a short-term wilderness program, and then try to see if you can't get some third-party funding or some help or some scholarships or something like that. And I found with parents really take the bull by the horn and work on it and do the research necessary. Generally, they can find something that fits. I know there's a lot of religious schools, and some of them are very good, that are on a sliding scale. And if it matches the needs of the kid, then that might be a way to go, something affordable.
I think that's great advice, and I'd like to add to it a little bit. Now, I don't know what state this particular listener is in, but I know California better than most of the other states. And because you've mentioned that that they're not going to school, that becomes a kind of a flag that pops up, which means that you can probably set up an IEP, which is an independent education plan. During that IEP, if the child is not coming to school, it's very possible that you can do what's called use AB 3632. So I think you would need to get an advocate. If you look up advocates, there's an advocate association as well. Get an advocate in your area and ask them what are the rules for your particular state as it relates to the Department of Education. And it's very possible that they will fund a non-public school if your child meets certain criteria. So give that a try.
Yeah, what I found in that is that basically the pattern is if a kid is not succeeding in school, then there's several options. And if you can demonstrate that the public school doesn't have the resources they need, if a public facility doesn't have the resources they need, then it goes down. Then they will pay a partial or all of the tuition of a private pay, parent choice type of program. And I've seen even here in Idaho some very expensive treatment programs, RTCs or hospitals, have been paid for by the school district. My advice to the parents is, in order to go this route, plan on getting pretty intimate with your attorney.
Yes. When Lon says attorney, they're the advocates in most cases are also attorneys. So that's certainly a good way to go. Now, Lon, one of the things that I always like to do on this show is to talk about success stories. Now, over the years, I am sure that you have worked with just, hundreds of young people. Can you share with us a couple of success stories? Obviously, without any names or anything, but just, where the child started out in a particular place, either psychologically, physically, mentally, and where they ended up, once they have gone through certain programs. If you could share some of that, because what I found, and we've had listeners that have contacted us afterwards and have said that some of those success stories, when they've heard them on the air, they've said, The beginning part of that story is where their child is now. And so they really appreciate the fact that they can see that light at the end of the tunnel by knowing how well another child turned out.
Yeah, one story that comes to mind, worked with several years ago, and it was a young girl, and she her habit was she would get bored at home, as a single father, and would get bored at home and the farmer brother, and so she'd run, and she ran throughout the Northwest and kept getting into problems. And the father did everything that he could. He talked to CASA volunteers, talked to the state, couldn't get anything together. And so finally it got so bad that he called me when she was picked up by the police for hitchhiking, vagrancy, and they said, you have 24 hours to pick her up, or I don't know what happened. They were going to put her into the juvie or state home or something like that. Well, the father contacted me. He said he'd tried everything else possible. She couldn't stop running. So he contacted me, and within 24 hours, I had a transport, lived close to her, pick her up, and the father and the transport person showed up, and the girl started ragging on the father and accusing him, and the transport agent was very good. He shut her down, said, your father is not part of this. You're coming with me. Got her into a wilderness program. And that's all they could afford, was just a wilderness program. She really needed long-term residential because she was out of control and putting herself in dangerous situations. Got her into a wilderness program. She came out of the wilderness program looking fantastic, had a good relationship with her father. They went back home, and they had tapped their resources at that. They couldn't go to a residential treatment center or a therapeutic boarding school. So in about a month, she left a note in the pillow and said, for the father says, you guys are great, but I just have to. And she went off running again. And the father was despondent. He'd done everything he possibly could, and then she was off doing the same stuff. And about 8 months later, she phoned him from in another state and says, Dad, it's just not fun anymore. Can I come home? And so he got her back home. She finished school. She went to a community college and graduated. Is married, has two kids, and her reaction to me was interesting. I wrote an essay on it, Childhood's In, that I have on my website. Mm-hmm. That was taken after the Arthur Clarke title of a book that he wrote. Well, what she was always polite every time I saw her afterwards, polite and all that, but when he asked her about it, he says, you know, he's the one that ended my childhood. And, she was 13, 14. She had to grow up. And she was overdue for growing up, and that's what the wilderness program did. So even a short-term program, if that's all you can afford, even that short-term intervention, 3, 4, 5 weeks, can be enough to plant the seeds that will turn them around. And that was a case that showed that.
Right. And what I hear you saying is, in it may not have taken effect immediately by the fact that she took off, but that there were still enough skills that she learned to where it still, everything stuck with her enough to where she still figured out how to make the right decision.
And I think important part here, she said, is no longer fun. She thought she was having a fun time. People were abusing her, taking advantage of her. They were stealing her clothing and all that, and she thought it was fun. When it happened again, she had enough self-respect from this experience to know that, hey, they're taking advantage of me. This is no fun at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which is all part of growing up. And as you were telling me that, it reminded me really of a story as well, and which had to do with a parent that had sent their child eventually to three different programs. And the child had gone to the program, and then eventually they'd come back and they backslid and such. And so the parent, and I got called to locate them after they had come home. They had backslid again, and then they had run away. And the parent called me and said, you know, I don't know what's going on. He says, apparently these programs aren't getting the job done. So he said, you're supposed to be the expert. He says, before you go out and find her, tell me, what is going on here and why aren't they succeeding with my child? And I asked him one question. I said, what's the common denominator? And he stopped and he paused and he said, it's me, isn't it? And that was the time in which everything changed for that family. This time, when she went to a program, it was an incredible success. So the program all of a sudden got a whole lot better when the parents didn't sabotage it when she went home.
That's a number of programs, and it's becoming more and more common in schools. Well, I say one school that pioneered this back in the 70s even, Hyde School. They figure that when they enroll a kid, they enroll three people, and the parents are required to come on campus on a fairly common basis and run their own program and have their own experiences so that they can understand the changes their child make. Nothing's worse than you take a child, get their head screwed on straight, and then they go back with parents that don't trust them anymore and think that the kid's just bluffing it and sabotages the return. Then there's the parents that sabotage the program itself. They're trying to control their child and tell the program what to do, or give the child, well, you just finished this program, I'll give you a new car when you get back. And just ask them to comply. There's lots of ways parents can sabotage, and a program has to work with them. But I think that's been very, very healthy, where parents have to be involved. And that's all part of the parent choice. The parents are involved, sometimes even going through their own program so they can straighten up their own issues, like this father, and they can better understand the changes their child has made.
Right. And when we were talking earlier about, and when I was asking you, what were some of the biggest changes that you've seen in this industry over the years, and I think this would be one of them, and that would be that the programs are getting much more involved in aftercare, where they're involving the parents both during and after the program.
Oh, absolutely. I forgot to talk about that. That is a big change. I see the change is coming from a mentality of we're the experts and we'll fix your kid and you messed him up, to the situation. We're on the same team, and the therapist and the program is working with the parents lockstep and the kid in trying to bring about positive changes.
Yeah. So now you mentioned a little bit about your website when you were talking about it. I want everybody to know, again, if you want to go to the website, if you want to look at what Lon puts out in regards to his newsletter, it's www.strugglingteens.com. Again, that's strugglingteens.com. If you're driving, if you can't write this down, you can always go to our blog. It's answers, the numeral for thefamilyblog.com. We will have all of Lon's information up there. Lon, I just got to tell you, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. And for those of you that are listening, we're going to be taking a break. And during that time, you'll hear the CBS News and such. And after that, Lon's show will start. So stick around, listen to Lon's show.
And we'll be switching positions.
Absolutely, which is going to be hard for me to get up to Idaho and for you to get back to California that quickly in 10 minutes.
I think
minutes.
We can work it out.
Yeah, we'll figure out a way to do it. So, again, for everybody out there, thank you for listening, and please continue. And for those that, that again, if you are driving out there, and you're unable to listen at this time, you can always go to the blog. You can always listen to these shows after the fact. This will be one that will be on our site probably before night's end. So, Lon, thank you so much for coming
on. Okay.
Well,
thank you, Alan. I very much enjoyed it, and I thought of a lot of questions that I want to ask when we flip positions in the next hour.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye now.
You're listening to the home of cool, irreverent, and entertaining talk right here on LA Talk Radio.
Raising children is a tough job. The job is even harder due to all the distractions, temptations, and dangers facing teens and their parents in our modern age. Some of these children are especially challenging and make such poor decisions as teens that their parents fear for their child's safety and future. I'm Lon Woodbury, and as an independent educational consultant, in my 22 years of practice as Woodbury Reports, we have worked to help hundreds of parents individually throughout the country who fear for their child's future. We also have an extensive website, strugglingteens.com, that provides as much objective information as we can to help parents. And we produce an LA Talk Radio show interviewing leading professionals who are helping parents right after Answers for the Family. If you have a child whose decisions make their future in doubt and you are looking for help, you can call me at 208-267-5550, and I'll be glad to try to help you. Or check my website, Struggling Teens, that's one word, .com.